Blog Talk Radio.
We made it!
Welcome to the war room. We got Dez, Kim, Jimmy, PJ, B. Austin, the Hot Block Commander.
How you wanna end a 1 or 2 hour show to keep the brain running with the premise to talk sports on a national level? Both with the topic, sort of like the rubber. When it's game time, they like the Fab Five doing prime time. Sports conglomerates speak their minds a little bit. For sports medicine, and sports veterans and greats. The 4 for 26, sort of war in Kuwait. It's the war room with five knights at the round table. Five Philly guys, diversified and educated.
What up, War Room family? The generals are back in the building. You know what that means. You are once again live in the War Room, brought to you by War Room Sports on the new WRS Podcast Network. I'm Devin McMillan, and I'm joined at the round table as usual by my guys, Jimmy the Blueprint Williams and B the HBC Austin. The NBA Finals commence this evening, so we're going to discuss this thing of ours in depth. But before we do that, we got a ton of other topics to get through, so make sure you join us right now in the JW Philly Realty chat room at blogtalkradio.com/the War Room, or join us on Facebook or Twitter at War Room Sports so you can join in the conversations. You can also call us directly when we open up the Digital Extreme Tech Hotline in about 30 minutes. That number, as usual, is 323-410-0012. Now, during the week, this is a 24/7 thing. Make sure you visit WRSPN.com or our main site, WarRoomSports.com, and listen to some of the best talk radio the Internet has to offer. Sports, lifestyle, culture, entertainment, and a whole lot more. The War Room Sports Podcast Network has it all. We've been telling you this for weeks. So you can hear shows such as The Broad Street Line with Roy Burton and Chris Domingo, Sports Trap Radio with Brandon Pemberton, the Gaffer and Hooligan Soccer Podcast with Kamal Hilton up in Canada. You can listen to The War Room with your boys and a whole lot more. So make sure you get over to the network. Check us all out. In addition, don't forget to catch us in syndication on Sundays and Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time on fatsradio.com. That's P-H-A-T-Z radio.com. Generals, what's good?
Man, you already know. Chilling.
Yo.
Yo, I need Steve Ballmer to cut me a check.
No doubt, but how about your man, Dwight, man? Jimmy hit me a little while ago talking about he had a 16-year-old girl putting him on blast on Instagram. Was it Instagram or some other social media site?
No, she hit him up
with IG.
IG and Twitter, she got him. You know, allegedly Dwight likes the young poon.
Yeah, I was reading the little article you sent me, and they were saying, you know, she was saying they had a romantic relationship. She flew him in a few times. He calls her his little princess. He getting his R. Kelly on. She never explicitly mentioned anything about sex. But come on, Dwight. You're not flying somebody in just to eat cereal.
Yo, you can't call nobody's daughter your little princess when she's 16, B.
Yeah.
Yo, come on, cuz.
That's suspect.
Yeah, Dwight is out of control, cuz. Like, you need to cut that out.
Dwight, man. You're drunk, cuz. You know, we didn't even get to the grind yet, but Dwight, my brother.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
I think that had to be the earliest JoJo nominee of all time.
The friggin' Lucy.
Yeah, that was a record. That was definitely a record.
All right, well let's. I'm gonna let everybody know what happened this week while they were on the grind. I'm pretty sure we'll get some more JoJo nominees out of this. So while y'all were on the grind, as usual, it's brought to you by DirecTV. If you'd like a better TV experience than cable has to offer, including that NFL Sunday ticket, which you're gonna need in a couple of months. Go to our website, warroomsports.com, click on the DirecTV logo and order yourself a better TV experience at a discounted War Room Sports sign-up rate. We got the hookup. And if you call yourself a sports fan, then you got to have DirecTV. All right, Donald Sterling. This was last Sunday prior to Donald Sterling putting his sword down and saying that the fight is over. I'm going to just take my $2 billion and leave the court. He was seen visiting a black church in South Los Angeles. Now, fellas, come on. Really? What do you think the meaning of this was? It's pure publicity stunt or what?
We will sell our soul for the right amount of cotton to pick. Never mind. Go ahead, Jimmy.
Because yeah, I heard he was actually invited.
Yeah, this story, yo, is out of control. Like, it just won't go away, man. I mean, I was just thinking about his side chick who got assaulted. You guys see that story?
Nah, Stiviano, I didn't see that story, man.
Yo, two dudes beat up Stiviano on the street. Her face looked all crazy. Not that it didn't look crazy before, but, I mean, like, he's in a black church. I mean, come on, cuz. Like, for real, like, just go away. I'm starting to think that they were accurate in saying that he's pretty much lost his marbles. I thought he was crazy like a fox, but now I think he's just crazy like a crazy-ass old man.
I saw a video where he actually got a standing ovation in church that day. He must have left a really nice offering. What y'all think the offering was in the plate that day?
Yo, I have no... Yo. I'm trying to, like, not say anything I shouldn't say myself that'll get us in any trouble, man, but the man is notoriously cheap. Let's just put it that way.
All right, but I actually heard that they let him get up to the pulpit for a minute, and he spoke because he said he was doing things for the black church because Magic Johnson doesn't. So this is what he said at the pulpit.
But what does he do for the black people? Doesn't do anything. You call up and think, well, you know,
he's
Jewish
opened,
people
he's
have
opened a lot of businesses in
people,
inner city neighborhoods.
The Jewish people have a company, and it's for people who want to borrow money and no interest. They want to give them a fishing pole. We want to help people. If they don't have the money, we'll loan it to you. You don't have interest, one day you'll pay us back. I'm just telling you, he does nothing. It's all talk.
So everybody at this church left with a loan, basically. So shout out to Donald Sterling for continuing this whole charade and making this whole... Isn't he Jewish? Why is he at church? Isn't he Jewish?
Yo, listen, man, exactly. Yo, man, the only thing came out of this whole Donald Sterling thing is the greatest quote I've ever heard in my life.
What has he done? Can you tell me? Big Magic Johnson, what has he done?
Well, yes, he's a business person.
He's got AIDS. Did he do any business? I'd like...
Yo, every time.
What's that to do with his business? He's got AIDS. All right, man. All right, we'll talk a little bit about Donald Sterling later in the show. This dude is
Does he not get nominated? Because, I mean, come on, cuz. Like, yo, just go away. Take your bread and go away.
You got to nominate him because he won't leave, first of all.
You should be ashamed of yourself. The way you carry
right.
To be honest, there's two nominees in that story because the black people that invited him to church are definitely nominees for the JoJo Award. They have to be ashamed of themselves. They have to be.
Yeah, because I would have thought that if he showed his face that, you know, it would have been some slow singing and flower bringing, but obviously not.
Yeah, I'm telling you, man, you write a big enough check or you throw a big enough amount of cash in the collection plate. He pulled a, what's the boy's name, Akeem from the Prince of Zamunda when he put all that cash in the collection plate. But anyway, man, another story. Marcus Jordan, the son of Michael Air Jordan. We all know that he hasn't done much to live up to his father on the basketball court to live up to that name. So now he's trying his hand at rapping. And you know, we got a whole summer. Look at all that shit, won't face it. Louis backpack, Tristan Jacob, on that throw back, yay shit. Rockin' ordained basics, grade A shit. Cushion red wine got me feeling amazing. Counting all this money got me feeling real Asian. Smoking all this ganja cause this bitch is Jamaican. Oh. Niggas out here frontin' what they really be making, no lie. If they with me, they know that my niggas is paid. Yeah. And these bitches these days, I swear they the same. Everything I got on, somewhere's my name. Yeah. Fine women, but naked and nothing but J's. I don't care, fuck what you...
Yo.
All right, that's Michael Jordan's son. trying his hand at hip hop, rapping over the Drake "We Made It" freestyle. What do y'all think about his bars, first of all?
Yo, that new style.
He ain't got bars like that.
That new style in which they call drill music, I'm just not fond of it because it sounds exactly like that. Like you're part of a band and you're just like screaming or something. Like it's not really the hip hop I'm accustomed to. But that's the flow he chose. In terms of his lyrical content, he's wearing clothes with his name all over it. That's your daddy's name, not your name. I understand that you're his son. You're a regular, man. I get it. Like, yo, you can't play ball, so you want to run. Like, if I was Michael Jordan's son, I wouldn't even play ball. Like, LeBron's son's coming up, like, I would just play a different sport. I would just concentrate on baseball.
Football.
Like, dude, take the Grant Hill route.
Yeah.
Like, Grant Hill
probably wouldn't rap either.
Football.
Yeah, I mean, not either, though.
I mean, it's like, yo, everybody can't rap. It is what it is, man. But, yo, Grant Hill took the right route, man. Your pop was an amazing football player. He just went to a whole different sport. That's how you do it. Because, yo, you can't live up to your pop. Like, you just can't. I mean, Magic's son took a whole different approach. He chose a different gender.
You are. Yeah, but he has a lot of, you know, a lot of lyrical content that's, you know, it's I guess you would say it's typical, you know, of hip-hop these days. You know, he talking about biatches and got so much money he feel Asian. And
yo, like, why the Asian
what are you talking
thing,
though? He probably had to rhyme with something. I don't know. I don't want to stay on that, man. I just wanted to play those bars for everybody.
He said he's in a room with a bunch of chicks, but naked with nothing on but J's.
So does he think that he's advertising for his dad? Because I'm pretty sure his dad is going to distance himself from this whole 2-minute, 24-second freestyle where he mentioned his dad like 4 or 5 times.
I ain't got bars like that. It's nothing but J's. F-O-H, Young Mike. Yo, man, it's sad to say, man, but, I mean, yo, I mean, everybody just can't rap, B. I know everybody's tried to rap, but there's a difference between being a rapper and wanting to rap, you know what I'm saying? So, yo, young Jordan, yo.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
Jordan.
The way you carry yourself.
And the thing about it is we clown him, right? But at the end of the day, like, if your father is Michael Jordan, you probably could have literally done anything you wanted to. You know what I'm saying? Like, whether athletic or non-athletic, you probably could have, you know, became a doctor. You could have engineered. You could have been an entrepreneur. You could have done anything you wanted to. But you want to shoot those bars, though?
And you chose to do that. That's what you wanted to do.
Yeah, man.
So basically, we talked about last week how the mentality in low-income areas is, you know, I'm either going to be a rapper or an athlete. So he's basically proven it's the same for rich kids. I mean, basketball failed, so now I'm a rat. It's the only way out. Only way out of Michael's mansion.
That's a great point. Like, because he could have literally done it. I'm pretty sure his father, man, I don't want to get on any personal business, who knows that his father would have put him in a position to do anything. But to have that same mentality, yo.
Because the streets is a short stop. Either you're swinging crack rock or you got a wicked jump shot.
Jump shot wasn't wicked. That's next. When his rap career failed, he's just going to buy a bird and just start his thing off from there. All right, man. Anyway, Browns receiver Josh Gordon, man, this guy, again. Actually, this time he was just pulled over for going 74 miles per hour in the 60-mile-per-hour zone. He was fined $187 for that. The thing about it is his passenger was cited for possession of less than 200 grams of marijuana. Now, do any of you brothers believe that this marijuana either just belonged to his passenger or, I mean, do you think this was a case where, you know, they were smoking together or this was just the passengers or was it Josh Gordon's and the passenger just took the hit for him because Josh can afford to have lackeys do that? Remember, he's basically like a suspension is pending. He could get suspended for the season for failing another drug test. So while this is pending, you know, you get into another mix-up where the drugs are supposedly not yours, but why keep putting yourself in these situations? What do y'all think about this?
Listen, man, I saw what Chris Carter said about Josh Gordon. It's just funny, though, because when we talk about marijuana, we have this thing where we don't look at marijuana as being a drug that you could become a hardcore addict to. I don't, you know whether the science supports that or not, but I know that just from the standpoint of talking to people, when you say someone's addicted to coke or crack, there's a whole different thing. But, yo, dude must have an addiction problem because, just like Chris Carter said, what he's risking for, like, smoking pot is kind of crazy. It's kind of crazy,
yeah,
but...
Chris Carter said something like smoking pot is more important to him than playing in the NFL or something like that.
If anything, anybody know anything about some drugs, it's Chris Carter. So, I mean, but you understand what I'm saying? When you say, yeah, he must just be addicted to marijuana, like people look at you like you're crazy, like, yo, ain't nobody addicted to marijuana. Because, first of all, it should be legal, but that's a whole other point.
He needs to play for the Broncos or something. He'd be all right. But, yeah, he does seem to be risking things. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt, even though he doesn't deserve it, and just say this was his passenger's marijuana. Dude, you've been suspended once. You know, he was suspended for a couple of games last season, still led the league in yardage. Second suspension
is
never
nice. That's the thing, he's so talented.
So
I mean, this guy, although he was taken in the supplemental draft, this guy is uber talented. He has the ability to become something special in the league. Yo, but you risking it if it is? I mean, and the thing is, think about it. Ricky Williams straight walked away from the game just to smoke that weed. Like, I don't know, man. I don't understand, man.
Yeah.
I don't understand.
I gotta be a reefer addict to understand. I'm not a reefer addict.
My man called it reefer. Man, ain't nobody called it reefer since, like, the 80s, yo.
Yeah.
Said reefer. Yo, but yeah, man, something's definitely wrong, man. And the fact of the matter is, man, like, because he's so talented, that makes the story worse because you really have a chance to get, like, you know, a nice amount of chicken. And, you know what I mean, like, it's just crazy, man. So for that being said...
You should be ashamed of yourself.
Josh, you drawing, dog. You drawing. All right, how about your girl Serena, B. Austin's girl, especially. She, quote-unquote, crashed a wedding on the beach down in Miami and you know, was taking some photos, posted some photos to Instagram with the bride and groom, but she's in a leopard print bikini. So, if you guys were getting married and, you know, Serena agreed to come on over and take some photos, like, where would your mind be at the married and divorced on the same day?
Yeah, I'd have been divorced on the same day. Like, that, you know what I'm saying? Like, come on, cuz. Yo, when I saw that, I'm like, come on, cuz. Some people are like, well, how could she do that? She's tacky for doing that. I'm like, yo. I mean,
yeah,
it should be more exciting to do this.
Yeah. No, I mean, because I read
the groom
they actually went over. The groom actually asked his, you know, one of his groomsmen to go over there because before the wedding started, they saw her on the beach or whatever. So she didn't just crash it like all the outlets are making it seem like. They actually went over there and asked her if she wanted to come over, and she was all hype about it. Came over, took some pictures with everybody, the bride and groom, threw them up on Instagram, made them instantly famous, so... You know, the thing about it was she was in a leopard print bikini. I mean, it was a one piece, though. Not that makes much of a difference with what Serena's working with, but Austin, you did the beach thing. How would you have felt if Serena Williams came over to your ceremony, you know, in a bikini?
Why would you try and set me up and ask that question? As if this episode can't be listened to by people that, come on, man. I would thank her kindly. I would thank her kindly for joining us and ask her to go that away.
You wouldn't have invited her to the dinner?
Probably not.
He would have tried to find her afterwards.
Yo, man.
All right, man.
Yo, man.
Stop this. Austin, if you could have any chick throughout any period of time crash your wedding, which chick would it be?
Me?
Yeah, you. You named Beyonce.
Golly. There's a couple.
Pam Grier.
Pam Grier from, like, I guess the 70s in her heyday. Because Pam Grier is still number.
Yeah, she's still getting it done, but definitely.
Yo,
yeah,
shout out to Pam Grier, who personally follows me on Twitter. I'll be trying and getting her DM. Anyway, go ahead, though. Who else?
I don't know. That list too long, man. We'd be here all day.
That list long. Yeah, that list.
I know it's a
next
long list, but it got to be somebody at the top, though. Come on, King.
Thanks, man.
All right, we move on then, man. I'm just trying to figure out, you know, because I know how B. Austin feels about Serena, man, but, you know.
We're about to give these birthday shout-outs after that. We're going to talk to Andrew Gross of the Bergen County Record up in North Jersey. He's a beat writer for the New York Rangers, so of course he's out in L.A. at the Stanley Cup Finals. He's going to give us a quick report on what's going on out there and what the Rangers can do to bounce back from that Game 1 loss. But before we do that, Jimmy, who's having a birthday?
You already know the birthdays are brought to you by Dr.
Serena
Monique Gold of Alexandria Podiatry Associates. For the best and comprehensive treatment of injuries to the foot, ankle, and lower extremities, visit Dr. Monique Rowe of Alexandria Podiatry Associates. Treating patients in the D.C., Maryland, and Virginia area and beyond, visit alexandriapodiatry.org or call 703-379-0700. Tell them War Room Sports sent you. Get you a hookup.
It's my birthday. Yay!
Got some interesting birthdays this week, gentlemen. Marcus Colston turns 31.
Harrisburg, dude. Pennsylvania's finest.
Dude always ends up on my fantasy team somehow. Nobody ever drafts Marcus Colston. Now Jimmy Graham taking all his fantasy shine, though, so I'm not picking him up this year.
Yo, Jimmy Graham taking everybody. Like, the Borden photo, nobody but Jimmy Graham no more.
Yo, he's not even a tight end, yo. He's just an oversized wide receiver.
That's the
they're
argument.
They're saying that his contract is coming up. His contract is coming up, and they're talking that they should pay him like a receiver.
Yeah, that's the beef. His camp is saying
negative is he don't block, so he don't know how to block.
They don't keep him in the block.
How many receivers could block these days? Like, yo, we're going to get into that another time, man.
Yo, why are we talking about Jimmy Graham's contract on Marcus Colston's birthday?
We try to talk about celebrate these men's birthday, man. Yo, next birthday is the great Zydrunas Ilgauskas, who turns 39. Next one, the man, the myth, the legend, John Carlos, turns 69 today. Shout out to Dr. John Carlos.
Throw your fists up.
Shout out.
And how about this one? Tommy Smith turns 70 tomorrow. How crazy is that?
I never knew that, you know.
Yeah, and how about that? Everybody knows how those gentlemen will be forever linked in history. For those who don't know, 64 Olympics, the Black Power Salute, although really shouldn't be called that. Yeah, cop the book. Do your research. Tommy Smith and John Carlos, both of our birthdays. So shout out to those gentlemen. And shout out to everybody on their birthday. We'd like to give a nice big warm salute to everybody on their birthday. You already know.
It's my birthday. Yay!
Tell everybody to get in touch with us.
All right. You can get our guests on the line in a second. But before we do that, you guys, you can check us out as usual at warroomsports.com. While you're there, be sure to sign up for the War Report. That's our weekly newsletter. Click on the Contact Us tab to send a message about our company, the show, or to inquire about sponsorship and advertising opportunities. For general inquiries, just email us, info@warroomsports.com. While you're browsing the site, click on the Memorabilia tab to buy War Room Sports merchandise. Click the Blog tab to read our latest sports articles. And it's not just sports. This is a culture blog, so you can read our articles in the All Fair and Sports and War blog. You can click the respective icons and tabs to like our Facebook page, to follow us on Twitter, subscribe to our iTunes podcast, to watch our videos at warroomsportstv.com, or to listen to the network at WRSPN.com. But you can download our free War Room Sports mobile app and get everything I just mentioned on the go. Join the JW Philly Realty chat room right now during the show at blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom. To enter the chat room, just sign up for a free profile on Blog Talk Radio if you don't want to create an account. You can sign in through your Facebook or Twitter accounts, and while you're at it, click follow to get updates and reminders about the show. We'll be taking questions and reading posts from Facebook, Twitter, and the chat room during the show. But if you want to call in and speak to us directly, just dial the Digital Extreme Technologies hotline at 323-410-0012. Press 1 when prompted. If you're already listening from your phone, just press 1 if you'd like to talk. All right, so the Stanley Cup Finals are underway. The Los Angeles Kings and the New York Rangers played Game 1 last night. It was actually a very good game. The Rangers actually dropped a 2-goal lead to lose the game in overtime. And that brings us to our guest. We're going to talk with Andrew Gross from the Bergen County Record. He also writes the blog on NorthJersey.com called Ranger Rants. So he's out in L.A. right now to cover the series, so we're going to bring him on the line. Andrew, are you there?
Absolutely. How are you guys doing today?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm enjoying a little sun right now on an off day here, but it's it's been pretty hectic, and it's been some pretty good hockey so far.
Okay. So, we're not going to keep you for a long time because we know that, you're out there covering the series and everything's kind of busy. But like I was just talking about, Game 1 last night, the Rangers actually dropped a 2-goal lead to lose the game in overtime. So what do you think the Rangers have to do? Are there any adjustments that you think they should make or could make to get back into this series on the road and maybe come back to New York with a split?
Well, yeah, I mean, the first and foremost, they have to be able to take the puck away from the Kings. They barely touched the puck at all in the third period, a little bit in overtime. But the Kings, for 40 minutes, it was a pretty even game, and then it was like the Kings flipped the switch, and suddenly they showed why. I mean, I think it's pretty clear right now that the Kings are the best team in the NHL. But that doesn't mean the Rangers can't beat them. It just means that the Kings are, deeper, and they play a little bit more physically, and they have some more goal-scoring options than the Rangers do. So it's a very tall order for the Rangers to beat this team. But they've showed a tremendous resiliency. But they haven't come up against a team like the Kings yet. And when, like I said, when the Kings wanted to play in the third period, the Rangers just couldn't touch the puck. So they're going to have to, play up a little bit more. They're going to have to get more sticks on pucks. They're going to have to be able to get through the neutral zone, and they're going to have to be able to get the puck deep, into the Kings zone and establish a forecheck. And all those things were absent in the third period last night.
Okay. Well, the atmosphere out there, I mean, because I know it's been a little bit hectic, but, L.A. is not really known as a hockey town, and, people have gone out of their way to make that known, but I did hear that, it was a raucous house last night. I mean, and why wouldn't it be? It's the Stanley Cup Finals, but, how has it been? A lot of fans out there, a lot of New Yorkers make the trip.
I saw some New Yorkers out here. Yeah, it's kind of like I remember it from a couple of years ago when I covered the Devils against the Kings out here in L.A. It's pretty much, L.A. it's a weird town. I mean, and I say that coming from New York. I think L.A. people probably think New York's a weird town. But
right.
it's a different vibe out here. People care about things in the moment, and then they move on to the next thing. So, the atmosphere in the building was pretty good. But you walk around town today, and, it's early June, and it's about 80 degrees, and there's not – it's certainly – you're not thinking hockey right now, and I don't see anyone wearing a Kings jersey where I am right now.
Yeah, see, I think it's those towns that – that live in the moment, those are the ones who get all the success, and they're kind of spoiled. You know, L.A., now you got Miami with the Heat. Like, if the Heat end up losing this series, I think their fans will pretty much get over it in a day or two. It's not like that for a lot of towns out there.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, I mean, right. You're absolutely right. It's, you see it at Dodger games. You know, you go there, and if you stay past the seventh inning, then you've stayed a long time. So,
yeah, that's the kind of town it is out there. I mean, I love L.A.
Yeah.
So prior to the series beginning, how much of a chance, if you can put a percentage to it, what was your percentage chance of the Rangers actually beating this team in a series?
Well, I'll start by saying in the record I predicted the Kings were going to win in six games. I thought for the Rangers to win this series, you know, Henrik Lundqvist was going to have to steal a couple of games. And I really think game one was the game that the Rangers could have gotten out here in L.A. just because, the Kings were kind of on tired legs playing an overtime game in Chicago in game seven and then having to fly back here. So they were the ones who were traveling a little bit more. The Rangers kind of had 5 days off between games. They were well rested. And I think you saw that at the beginning. It took a while for the Kings to get their legs. With Henrik Lundqvist in net, I will always give the Rangers a chance. And, even after a game, I guess you would call a missed opportunity for the Rangers here, I still think they're, it's only one game. I think they're
right.
They have a chance to be very much in the series. However, like I said, they can't allow the Kings to play such a superior brand of hockey as they did in the third period, because otherwise this will be a short series.
Right. All right. Yeah, and something, you talked about the rest. And, yeah, I read something prior to the series that did say, that rest, it may not actually be a great thing for the Rangers. And game one, it didn't really prove to be, but we'll see how it goes on. So we definitely want to thank you for coming by for a few minutes to give that report for us. We'll definitely get back with you throughout the series when it gets back to New York. And, just check in with you to see what's going on. But we'd like to thank you for coming on once again, Andrew.
Oh, my pleasure. You got my number. I love talking to you guys. So, take it easy, and I'm going to go back and, get a couple of a little bit more sun for the rest of the day.
All right. Enjoy it while you're out
enjoy
there.
Enjoy that Southern California weather, Andrew.
All right. Will do.
All right. Thank you. We'll be in touch.
Take care.
All right, that's Andrew Gross, everybody, from the Bergen County Record in North Jersey. You can also check out his blog, Ranger Rants, and that's on northjersey.com. All right, when we posted everything on our page about on our Facebook page about the Stanley Cup Finals, we have a lot of New Yorkers who actually follow the page, so most of the predictions was going in the way of New York. I kind of wondered how much a lot of those people actually know about hockey, but people are going to pick their home team regardless. So
absolutely.
Good
man.
Luck to both teams. My team's not in it, so good luck to both teams. Do your thing.
I hope they both lose. Anyway, man, before we jump into the rest of the Hot Topics, I want everybody to know that Hot Topics are brought to you by Audible. If your schedule is too hectic to read as much as you want, try audiobooks and kick back and let someone else do the reading for you. All you have to do is visit Audible and sign up. That's audibletrial.com/warroomsports. You get your free book by going there. Everybody knows audiobooks is my thing. I'm still in the middle of that Sugar Ray Leonard book, which is a pretty good book, although B. Austin thinks he's the most overrated fighter in boxing. But still a good book. With that being said, go to audibletrial.com/warroomsports. A lot of great sports biographies are on Audible, and you can get one free just by signing up.
Well, he can't show you how to hit my elbows and win. End of round.
Just a quick little story. The Super Bowls in 2016, how since 1971 they've been doing the Roman numerals with the Super Bowl?
Uh-huh.
In 2016, Super Bowl 50 is going to be just Super Bowl 50. They're going to use the actual numbers. What do you guys think of that? Like, is this a big deal? Because people are actually making a big deal out of this whole thing. I was actually tired of the Roman numerals. But that's basically because we always do, like, shows and write articles. And, you know, we do a lot of things surrounding the Super Bowl, so we always got to remember what the hell the Roman numerals are when we're putting out content. That's the only problem I really had with it. Other than that.
No, it's funny because before they did this, I was thinking how are they going to work this with the L in it, because the L looks kind of stupid anyway.
Super Bowl
50,
L.
50 is like a powerful number when you look at it. Like, it's just something about the number 50. So, you know, I don't think it's a problem, but, I mean, it's a non-story.
I think it has something to do with the dumbing down and the stupidity of the human race.
Okay, here we go.
But no. I'm gonna leave that to the book. I'm gonna leave that to the book that I'm writing called "The Dumbing Down of the Modern Human Being."
call it double my lyric. It say dumb down.
I mean,
my lyrics,
but it's
so
only
my dollars.
It's only supposed to be a 1 year thing though, because they just don't think the L looks right, like Super Bowl L.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to take a Super Bowl L, but to call the game Super Bowl L is kind of crazy. So they're supposed to go back to the Roman numerals once 51 comes along. So we'll see, you know, how it is.
As long as the Raiders don't play in the bowl, it's all good anyway.
All right, I just wanted to get your opinion on that real quick. Kaepernick. Let's talk about Colin Kaepernick, because came down the wire yesterday that Colin Kaepernick got this huge new contract, 6 years, $110 million, $61 million guaranteed. Now, the $61 million guarantee had everyone up in arms, you know, saying it was a record contract, and, you know, there was a lot of discussion surrounding it, but a lot of the reports that you've heard today, they're kind of breaking down the contract and letting everyone know that the contract isn't as lucrative as it first seemed, and there's a few reasons for that. One being they're going to get him at a low salary cap figure this season, but that's beside the point. But relative to his cap number, which maxes out at $16.8 million in 2015, the annual franchise. The franchise tag was $16.192 million this offseason, and it's probably going to rise next year. So what they're saying is, even though it looks like his contract averages out to like $22, $23 million, it's really going to average out to being less than what the franchise tag is. So they're actually getting him at a better market value than the contract, you know, actually seems like. So what do you guys think about this deal? First of all, even if it's not a record-setting deal, is Colin Kaepernick worth this type of money that they're paying him?
Well, that depends upon how you describe worth. Colin Kaepernick still gets money. Anyway, with that being said, not bad for a guy drafted. You know, he wasn't supposed to be the starting quarterback for a story franchise. I mean, maybe he was drafted in the second round. They didn't trade up to get him, but no one thought this would be what Colin Kaepernick has become. I mean, this guy has been playing deep into the playoffs. Not saying it's because of him. Some people think they lose because of him. They've played as well as they have despite him. Some people say that. Nonetheless, the guy is an up-and-coming young quarterback. We'll see how it all pans out. The jury is still out on him in terms of how he's paid. I mean, he plays the quarterback position. There's not too many good quarterbacks in the league. I think every quarterback in the entire NFL is overpaid. If you talk about what they're worth, but it's
right.
The market fair.
Hey, Jimmy, it's interesting that you brought up the fact that, you know, that they go deep into the playoffs every year. This contract, you know, changes what they're allowed to do around him for the next few years, because I think a big reason that they've gone deep in the playoffs is because they actually, as far as quarterback contracts go, I think they were like the last ranked team in the league as far as how much they're paying quarterbacks.
Even
now
beyond
that he's getting this big
Seattle
deal.
Playing, Russell Wilson won a chip, and he was playing for like $25.50 an hour.
No, but we're talking about the whole quarterback roster. So, you know, all of their quarterbacks were playing for cheap. Like,
yeah,
Russell
Seattle
Wilson's backup was making a little bit of – yeah. So,
well,
So now they're going to have trouble putting the kind of talent around him that they've been putting around him. But I mean, but he's a quarterback, and if your quarterback has proven to be the guy that you want for the future, then you have to pay him. So you can't, you know, just keep doing what you've been doing. So hopefully
they
have
he don't care
around,
who they sign.
They may
he
not
said
be
all he wants. I mean,
straight cash.
Yeah, I think it just affects the depth that we all know San Francisco has.
A couple of thoughts here. First is the guarantee. I think, as you pointed out, it's an injury guarantee, and it's done on a year-by-year basis. So that 61 isn't fully guaranteed. It's a partial that goes by the year. They could literally cut him after the first season and only be on the hook for $13 million. They could cut him after the second season and only be on the hook for $28 million. So it's actually a pretty smart contract. If you don't take, in my opinion, his talent level and ability into account, and you just look at him being a franchise quarterback, it's a pretty smart financial tool. I'm not mad at the structure. Now, me, as I've stated, I think that he's grossly overrated, and it's a quarterback-driven league. But
actually, I heard someone call him elite today.
Yeah,
that's what I was going to say. Like, who's overrated?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's the more or less the casual fan. Those that watch football understand that the Niners are a team that are truly a throwback team, and they do things based on defense and running the ball. So they don't place a lot of value on high level of quarterback play. They tell Colin Kaepernick, go out there, get us a few first downs, get us maybe two touchdowns, we'll run the ball, get another two touchdowns, and then our defense is going to lock up and the other team's not going to score much. So for me, when I look at him, it's kind of like, well, if you're going to pay him like he's an elite quarterback, then you have to look at whether he truly is elite. Then people will point to the stats and they'll say, well, statistically his QBR rating is this and his completions are that and this, that, and the third. Why? Because they don't take a lot of shots. They have a conservative passing attack that caters to him being kind of not really that elite. So my thing is, I still think that they're overpaying him. I just like the structure of the contract for if it was truly an elite quarterback, I would think that they got off easy. But for him, I don't think that he's a franchise type of quarterback, not yet anyway.
Yeah, and I mean, and they have, like, the contract is incentive laden, so, you know,
right.
If he doesn't meet these incentives, which, you know, they're not easy incentives to actually reach,
right.
He could be making less than his peers.
$2 million a year.
Yeah, I mean, he could be making less than his peers. Like, he has to the goals of the contract is, one, a Super Bowl berth. We all know that's not easy to do. Look how close they've been. And, you know, you don't stay at that level for too long. So at some point the Niners are going to, you know, be on the downslide, on the decline. He has to take at least 80% of the snaps, or he has to make first or second team All-Pro. Like, these are lofty incentives. Like, the 80% of the snaps, that's probably going to be the easiest one to get, but this is still football. So even just banking on 80% of the snaps is not something easy to do, because you can get injured at any time. Plus, he's a quarterback who rushes the ball pretty frequently. So
my man
going to
be out there playing
snaps is going to be
difficult. Get that chicken.
Yeah, so if he doesn't meet these lofty incentives with the projected rise in the salary cap, and he might actually find himself below market value for quarterbacks who are considered franchise quarterbacks.
They can dump him, and you make a great point, Dev. Anquan Boldin is our age. Patrick Willis has been doing it for quite some time now, and I only give him another two or three seasons of being at an elite level. Navarro Bowman,
he's elite now.
What could be considered, could be considered a career-threatening injury. Justin Smith, do you guys realize Justin Smith is like 36 years old balling like that? He's old as dirt. And Frank Gore is old as dirt. So the window may actually be closing on that team. a little
bit. I mean, yeah, I agree. And I don't think I'm as tough on Kaepernick, Paul, as B. Austin is, because, I mean, I think he has showed a little bit of promise. You know, but like I said, the jury is still out on him. The market for quarterbacks is always going to be crazy. It seems like every year we're having a conversation about is somebody overpaid, whether it be Stafford, whether it be Flacco, now Kaepernick. Like, every year we're going to have this conversation about who's overpaid, because that's just what it is at that position in this league. You know, next year, who's next year?
Well, that's what I was about to say. I think the way they structured this deal, I think this could be a sort of a game changer by the 49ers. Because I think a lot of other teams who have quarterbacks coming up on contracts might actually look at the way this deal is structured, and you know, it's a copycat league, even on the money side of things. So you got Russell Wilson coming up. You got
a good agent. They're gonna FOH this. Yeah. Sort of like when Ricky Williams tried to change the game. Remember Ricky Williams tried to change the game? He went in there with Master P and took the shocker to get the contract.
Bad agents.
He had in his straight incentive-laced contract and said,
he didn't make a dollar unless he got his incentives.
Yo, my man didn't make a dollar unless he got 1,000 yards. And
his joint was like, he made like a dollar a yard because he let Master P do his deal.
Cam Newton agent is about to back the truck up real nice. He wants to say, I don't care what Kaepernick got. Our truck is right here. Just put the bags in.
Yeah, so those are the guys and agents you have to watch. Russell Wilson, Cam Newton, Andrew Luck. Robert Griffin III.
Your Philadelphia Eagles have to pay your guy.
Nick Foles, Andy Dalton. There's a few guys. You know, it's a lot of young quarterbacks, young up-and-coming quarterbacks who are coming up on that big money contract. So we'll see if indeed the 49ers did change the game or if the agents are going to band together and say, nah, we're not standing for this.
So that Kaepernick get injured. That's what they do.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, so those are the hot topics. Let's do a quick round of verses, man. We haven't done a verses in a long time, at least not on the air. And this round of verses brought to you by Stitcher Smart Radio. You can now hear our show. You could hear it for a long time on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your computer, your iPhone, your Android phone, your BlackBerry or your Palm phone, if you're still rocking with those. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed. No memory or storage wasted. I know from experience, you know, since our show is on there, if you sign up and you put our show as a favorite, like every Friday, since we do our show on Thursday evening, every Friday you'll get an email saying that the War Room has a new episode. So, like I said, no syncing, no memory or storage wasted. Downloading is easy. Just click on that Stitcher logo on our website, warroomsports.com, and just listen. Or download to your mobile phone directly from that page before you do. Enter the promo code THEWARROOM, all one word, for a chance to win a cash prize. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. All right, let's play a round of verses. And if you haven't heard us do this segment before, I mean, it's self-explanatory, so I'm not really going to explain it to you. Because of the NBA Finals, you know, Miami, the Heat are seeking that illustrious three-peat that only few teams in NBA history have been able to achieve. So with them in the news all week and everybody talking about three-peats, of course, former Chicago Bulls forward Horace Grant, who was on Chicago's first three-peat team, basically said, if we played the Miami Heat, they wouldn't stand a chance. We locked them up. Michael would have a field day, especially if we played with today's rules. So, fellas, the current Miami Heat team seeking the three-peat, I guess you can, whatever year, the first championship, the second championship, or this year, whichever team you think Miami was at their highest of their superpowers versus the three-peat, the first Bulls three-peat that featured Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, Horace Grant, Cartwright, Paxson. You guys know the roster. Who would win in a seven-game series? What are your thoughts and why?
I know it would be fast for you.
Would you say B. Austin?
I said Bulls. Bulls in six. Bulls in six games. Not even close.
Okay, I think it'll be closer than that.
Two-hour show, that's all you're going to say?
I know. I'm sitting there thinking about it. Like, I think it'll be closer. You said not even close. I know your hatred for LeBron and all that, but I mean, I guess you got Pippen on LeBron, Mike on D-Wade.
Michael versus D-Wade.
Rodman on Bob. I take that team and take Rodman. You taking that's the thing. Like,
No. We're taking the first team. Rodman has nothing
to do
with the
team. I'm taking Horace.
Yeah. You got Horace.
I think Bosh
versus...
might give Horace that work, though. He might give him a couple 1099. Bosh might give Horace that work.
Horace is a pretty good defender, but it's not like the Miami Heat allow Bosh to play down in the post anyway. So he could, you know, force Horace out. Horace's strength was rebounding. So, you know,
Bosh takes him out. It's going seven games.
Yeah, I think it's closer than a lot of people are saying. I wouldn't say that, you know, the Bulls are winning. It wouldn't be close. Me, you know, main point being, I think the second Bulls three-peat team was a stronger team than the first Bulls three-peat team. I think this team, you know, was when they first started to come into their own as a champion. You know, Scottie Pippen had just stepped up to that elite level, even though he was on the Dream Team, which he probably shouldn't have been at that point in his career. The matchups are pretty good to me. I mean, LeBron James, I think in any era, you know, whatever the rules are, I think he's still going to be a superstar-level player. Scottie Pippen will definitely make it difficult for him on the defensive end. But I still think it'll be a great matchup. Then you, like Jimmy said, you got Jordan versus Dwayne Wade. Of course, we give that matchup to Jordan, but Dwayne Wade at his highest, at his peak, you know, he's not just going to roll over for anybody. So I definitely think it's a much better matchup than a lot of people think.
We're talking about these guys at their peak, right? At the top of their game, right? So let's look at it this way. Is D-Wade a top five two-guard of all time?
I believe so.
Top five two-guard?
Yeah, top five
two-guard. Yeah, I think that he is.
And LeBron is arguably a top five small forward. I mean, MJ. So my thing is, it's going to be very close.
Can I say this?
At least at those two positions, you got top five all-timers at their positions.
If we're going position by position, I've seen what Kobe can do at the peak of his superpowers to Dwayne Wade, and Mike is a little bit more relentless with going to the rack than Kobe is, and Kobe can have his way. Kobe has his way with Dwayne Wade. Now, Dwayne Wade gives it back. Don't get me wrong, but Kobe gets the best of that, so I'm automatically giving Mike the best of that matchup. Dwayne Wade's too
good. I don't think there's anybody on the planet who's not giving Mike that individual matchup.
I'm just saying.
That's not even a question.
He's going to make Mike play D2, but hold on, though. Real quick in our chat room, we got a couple comments I want to say in reference to this conversation. Leroy says, the question should be, can the Heat beat any of the Bulls' opponents? He's basically like pooping on the Heat. He's saying he don't know if they can beat the Bulls' plays. All right, Skyview says, Rodman can lock down LeBron. But we're not talking about Rodman. We're talking about the first three-peat.
We're not talking about that three-peat. We're talking about the first three-peat.
Rodman's not on
this conversation.
I know. That's the first thing I thought of. But when you say that, that changes things. You say Rodman's not on the team. Because Rodman was such a versatile player, I think that's what made them a better team on the second three-peat. You know,
We made it a point to talk about the first one because I think when you get to that second Bulls three-peat, that's where you get more into an area of, like, I don't know. I mean, Jordan was definitely more at his peak during the first three-peat. I mean, as far as his physical skills, he was a much smarter player, much more efficient player during his – I'm not talking about just statistical efficiency because he actually shot more J's during the second three-peat and probably shot a lower – field goal percentage, but you know, he was just smarter, you know, his movement and everything was more efficient, and Scotty was at a different level than he was during the first three-peat. So that team, I would look at that as it, okay, that one I would just say Bulls, and it wouldn't be much of a thought for me. But when you go back to the first three-peat team, I'm like, I don't know. I mean, you got Paxton versus Chalmers.
One thing nobody is bringing up, you got Bo versus Phil Jackson.
Bo versus Phil. See, but even that's another thing. During the first three-peat, I don't think Phil was getting credit like that yet. Just like Spo doesn't really get credit like that now.
Yeah.
Spo mess around getting 9-10 championships, and then they'll be talking about him like they talk about Phil Jackson. But during that first three-peat, it was all, oh, man, they could put anybody on that bench, and Michael and all of them dudes, you know. That's how to talk.
I'm
Phil wasn't getting
deeper.
Respect during the second three-peat. I think Phil had to actually go to another team and win some chips to get
the coaching matchups, though. I mean, Tech's winners versus Spo's assistants.
I mean, you could look at it that way, too.
Tex was the architect of their offense. That doesn't necessarily mean, I don't know. I can't quantify his effect on the actual players and what he meant to them as a coach just by the offense. I mean, the offense is a big deal because that's Phil's
team. Yeah, Tex Winters was the offensive coordinator. My thing is Phil Jackson prepared the team. He created the team atmosphere. He put the approach they would take, and this is on every team he's coached. But to get back to the original question, it will be very tough. I mean, the fact of the matter is the Heat are the bad guys these days. Nobody wants the Heat to win, including myself. But, you know, trying to be objective, their team is great. Whether you like the way they came together, now that they are together, I mean, they're doing what they got together to do. You know what I'm saying? It's like the NWO, but it is what it is, man. I think they would give the Bulls a run for their money.
Bulls. If we talk about the first three-peat, Jim, I'm with you. I think it goes 7 games, and I give the Heat a chance in that. Of course, I picked the Bulls in 7 just because of the Michael Jordan factor. You know, Superman will probably enter the building and make it really, really interesting. I would go to Bulls in 7, but I'm not going to disrespect the Heat and just say, you know, because a lot of people, when we asked on our social media outlets, oh, man, is this a real question? You know, we got that a couple of times.
Can I ask y'all how much do the rules of the game and the rules changes factor into this?
I get all deep with it and all that.
Whose rules are we playing under?
Of course, because most players today are, you know, they're going to be bigger, faster, and stronger. You know, either way you slice it, the Heat are going to have that advantage. But I think if you play with today's rules, I give the Bulls the advantage either way because Michael Jordan was so dynamic. If you weren't allowed to be as physical with him, it might be amazing what he would be able to do. But playing in the 90s with their rules, you know, what he was able to overcome physically, you know, for them to get on a championship run, I would give them the toughness factor as well, even though this team is probably, you know, the faster, the stronger, you know, better physical athletes. I would give them the toughness factor.
Be awesome. To that point, it also depends on whether we're taking them after the first championship. So if we're taking them after the first championship, you couldn't get close to Jordan without them calling a foul anyway. So Mike will walk on the court and foul out D-Wade in the first couple minutes because, you know, you weren't even allowed to breathe near Michael Jordan. Did they call a foul?
Absolutely, as well as should be. I mean, that's what LeBron gets to punch people in the chest every time he starts his dribble.
Why should it be, though? I mean, that's the same thing we heard last week when LeBron played 13 minutes or whatever, 23 minutes, and he was in foul trouble the whole time. You heard people saying, "Oh, come on, that's ticky tack. The superstar shouldn't be." But that's bull.
It's not fair. It's not necessarily fair. Okay, the superstar rule, but there are things that all of these guys are allowed to do. What LeBron does offensively with the basketball in his hands when he starts his dribble and when he makes a move is illegal and it is not called. So he gets the benefit of dipping his shoulder, elbowing, and punching people with his offhand. That's allowed. That's allowed in the game. So Mike gets the benefit of every move he makes, the whistle blows.
I ain't going to comment on that.
I think it would even out.
All I'm saying is this, man. All I'm saying is it would definitely be a tough series. I'm going to give my pick. I'm going to pick the Bulls strictly because of I think they're a mentally tougher team, and also the Jordan factor. I mean, Michael Jordan is going to foul everybody out because you can't even breathe around the man. You know what I'm saying? Like, so I'm taking the Bulls, man. Shout out to Michael Jordan.
Son of the greatest, talking all that shit, won't face it. Louis backpack, Tricky Jacob, on that throwback, yay shit. Rockin' ordained basics, great A shit. Cushion red wine got me feeling amazing. Counting all this money got me feeling real Asian. Smoking all this ganja because this bitch is amazing.
Yo, my man said, count all this money got me feeling real Asian. Yo, for those who just tuned in, that's Michael Jordan's son, by the way. He's been 16.
Jordan
so.
Family bars. Jordan family bars.
He said, counting all this money got me feeling real Asian. Come on, man. You can't say that. Sound like Reggie White.
Counting my allowance got me feeling real Asian. Come on, you ain't got no job.
Yeah, his allowance probably dealer. What kind of allowance you think Mike give his son?
I don't know. He's probably making
you
work.
Know, Mike,
he probably makes Jordans.
Working at the Jordan factory. That's why he keeps rapping about it.
Sweatshop Marcus. Anyway, man. All right, so B. Austin got the first three-peat Bulls in six. I got them in seven, and Jimmy has the Bulls in seven as well. Like
well,
I said,
B.
we talked about.
Let me ask you a question.
You know what? I won't compare them to the second Bulls three-peat until they actually three-peat. So if Miami actually wins this series against the Spurs, then we're going to pose that question. We're going to talk about the Dennis Rodman, Tony Kukoc team. Cool?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, go ahead, Jim. You about to ask Austin something?
No, I was about to say, like, you know, I know how B. Austin feels about Michael Jeffrey Jordan. Is there any team that you would take over the Bulls team? Or do you just have the Bulls as, like, that best team, you know,
which,
period?
Which three-peat team are you asking me about?
Let's say the first one. I guess the first one, you probably take the second
first
one over
one.
Them.
That first three-peat team could have gotten beat by the first Lakers chip team with Magic, Kareem, and those guys. I think that Lakers team would have had a chance to beat them because Kareem would have gave every big man on the Bulls roster hell. That would have been too much for them.
Okay. But I guess the second Bulls team you have is just like beating any team ever.
I mean, that's the definition of basketball as God intended it.
I think the first Bulls team would have lost to the 83 Sixers, but that's just me being a homer.
I agree with that, too. I think Moses
would have
But I
really do think it's true, yeah.
He gave them everything they wanted, plus.
Yeah, Kareem was scared of Moses at that point.
Yeah,
he couldn't do nothing with Moses at that point.
83 was on some other ish. Like, Moses was like anti-Dwight Howard. Like, an 83 Moses
was
on
the
mix.
Yeah, he was the opposite of Dwight. He was.
Yeah, so we'll talk about that.
People realize in 83, Moses was a better player than Doc. Like, Doc became second option, which is how they won, because Moses was just that dominant.
Yeah, Moses was that dude in 83. He was a league MVP that year, too.
Yeah, he won the MVP of the league. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, Moses is probably the most underrated player in the history of the game.
Oh, is Moses
overlooked.
Better than Shaq?
Overlooked.
Moses is better than Shaq.
It's difficult, and people are definitely going to have.
I know Beyonce automatically made the assertion right there. Like, yeah, Moses is better than
people,
Shaq.
People are going
to
have
I'm not ready to
business
say that.
History and say things like, is that really a question? But they need to go back and look before they say that. I'm not saying that, you know, if you say Shaq is better, that's a problem, because that's not a problem. But, you know, before you say it ain't close, before you say is this a real question, go back and do your history, do your knowledge, because I know a lot of y'all don't know nothing about Moses because he doesn't get talked about.
That works on both sides, too, because some people will say Moses fast. Like, some people are older. Like, Shaq's career is kind of weird because he stayed around so long. It's sort of like how I feel about Garnett now. At times when people bring up Garnett as being one of the greatest, I laugh, but then I think about it like, yo, I forgot how good he used to be because this Garnett playing for Brooklyn is not the Garnett.
But even if you go Shaq, like if you go his career versus Garnett, I still think people remember because Shaq he ended up accomplishing more than Garnett. So even on his fade out, it was, you know.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people.
I get that. But
Garnett's fade out
is
just making people forget about him because, you know, as far as team accolades, he didn't do much in the first place.
Most of the time when we compare careers, we always compare like a Duncan or a Shaq. And it's kind of different. Like, Shaq had a three-year period where he was the best player in the world, and that's without question. But it's like he went to that top, and he never, like, maintained it. And a lot of people say it's because of his work ethic or how serious he took the game. But for that three-year period, like, there's not too many players that can say they played at that level ever. You know what I'm saying? Like, even though it was only a short period of time, for that three-year period – so now it becomes, do you take
I was about to say, Jim, it's not many.
Best?
It's not many, but Moses is one of them players.
Moses is one of those players who
had that kind of a stretch. But because before he came to Philly, he was already acknowledged as being, like, the best player in the league when he was
those three Lakerships, the way Shaq was playing then, like, people were they were calling him, like, New Age Wilt. Like, he was out of control. And, you know,
because remember, like, the year, man, I'm not even going to go, because before the year that I'm going to start with, Moses was, like, 25 and 14, 24 and 17. But I'm going to go on his 3 years, 80, 81 in Houston. He was 27.8, 14.8, so basically 28 and 15. The next year in Houston, when he caught Philly's eye, he was 31 and 15. And then he went to Philly and won the championship at 25 and 15. So Moses, he had a stretch. And like I said, I just named the three, but there was about a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, maybe a 6 or 7 year stretch where no big man was really messing with this dude.
You know where he'll
get so overlooked, man.
Where you'll
so overlooked.
Shaq was like 30 and 15, 29 and 13, and like 27 and 11 in those three, and he had several years after that.
Always get Shaq. Is those 3 years were amazing, right? But as a rebounder, when you look at Moses' rebounding and Shaq's rebounding, it's laughable. It's laughable.
Yeah.
I mean, but also Shaq, you have to look at, like,
Shaq, I mean, Shaq was getting it in Orlando, too. It's just that cats like
Shaq's
Mike was still
in
the league.
He averaged in there 30.
He averaged almost 30 his second and third year. And then, you know, when he gets to L.A. and they really get the going, you know, Shaq went like 26 and 11, almost 30 and 14, 29 and 13. Yeah, Shaq got it in. for a good stretch.
He shouldn't have been there 60%. Like, I mean, Shaq, that's
27 and 11. Like you said, yeah, he could have been, definitely could have been a better rebounder for his
size. The problem is this, though. Here's the problem. The problem is Shaq was in Cleveland putting up like 12 and 6. Then he went to Boston.
Yeah.
He went to Boston and was putting up like 9 and 4. You know what I mean? Like,
he went to Boston and put up like nothing and nothing. Nothing
and
nothing.
And you know what, Jimmy? I don't let Shaq off the hook for those years. I don't. And your man set the precedent. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was 47 years old, putting up like 20 and 10.
He's a freak, though. He's a freak of nature, man. Like, that's the thing about it. Like,
he doesn't get it. So is Shaq. Shaq is a freak of nature. Then
no,
we get
come
but
on, man. Let's
He had old reliable.
If you want to do that, you got to hold Moses to the same standard. Moses played for the Spurs in like 95. Like, Moses still was hanging around in 95, yo.
I didn't know Moses
was alive in 95.
Yo, Moses was still in the league in 95 because he didn't want to – Moses started at like 18, so, he was around in 95 putting up like 10 points for the Spurs, though, man. Like,
yo, then the other thing, Jimmy, your man Shaq only played defense occasionally when he wanted to show the world that he could. Like, he didn't play defense on a night in and night out.
He didn't. Shaq played defense not to get embarrassed. Shaq was not going to let him. Like, Shaq, you never really saw Shaq get banged on, maybe by Derek Coleman. Like, one time. I can't think of anything else.
What's crazy about that? The best defensive players do get embarrassed because they're always out there trying.
They're out there trying. You let them run the pick and roll, and on the other side, Shaq will never show up.
There were some dudes, though, that you just weren't going to dunk on. Shaq was one of them. Charles Barkley was another one. Like, two kind of mediocre defensive players that you weren't going to just embarrass, though, like dunking on them or something like that. Charles met many dudes at the Apex trying to get one off on him. No saying. But let's go. But let's go into some more NBA talk, Jim, before we get into this NBA finals real quick, because, you know, we're going to end it on that because the day is all about that. The start of the finals is here. So let's talk some more NBA stuff real quick.
You already know, man. The NBA rap.
Some lines.
That's right. The NBA rap is brought to you by Fanatics. For the best in your favorite team's merchandise and apparel, shop Fanatics. Shopping Fanatics is easy. Go to our site, which is warroomsports.com. Click on the Fanatics logo. You can go buy some NFL, NBA, NHL, MLB, NCAA gear, and more. You know what I'm saying? So go get your gear. Go to Fanatics. Go to warroomsports.com and click on that logo. It's time to talk some basketball ball. We just brought up Phil Jackson, who, in my opinion, is the greatest coach of all time, and I know some people are going to cuss me out for that, but I have my reasons. He was fined $25,000 for tampering. He mentioned Fisher as a possible coaching hire. Couple things here. What do you think about Derek Fisher becoming a coach right away after, you know, playing deep into the playoffs this year? And what about Phil Jackson and his what he's done thus far in his new position?
I think that Phil is – it's too early to really tell. I think he's making some decent moves. The problem for me is I don't have an intimate understanding of what James Doolin has done to the franchise outside of, you know, what we hear in the media and what we see. We don't know how uncomfortable – Doolin is going to make it for Phil, as he does for all other executives except not named Isaiah Thomas. So we're not sure there. But he's making the right moves. He's trying to get good basketball minds in there. I'm going to go with, in terms of your man, Derek Fisher, I'm just going to go with my standard line when it comes to a bum point guard. Bum point guards are usually good coaches.
No.
They're usually good coaches.
I think Derek Fisher is a bum. Bjorken is like, yo, either you a star, a great player, or you a bum. There's like no in between.
No, that's not true. It's not true. You could be okay. You could be mediocre. I can name some mediocre guys. Fisher was a bum.
I've been hard on Fisher throughout his whole career. I wouldn't label him as a bum. I always looked at Derek Fisher as the type of dude, though, who, you know, playing on that great team, playing with Kobe and Shaq for a lot of his career, I just always imagined him, the dude, being out in L.A., like, trying to use his stature, like, yeah, I'm the point guard of the Lakers. Like, that mattered when Kobe and Shaq was on the team. He's definitely not as good as it seemed like history is making him and how he's going to go down. But I don't disagree that he's a smart enough basketball player to become a coach, I mean, especially in that system, because obviously Phil wants to handpick the guy who he can puppet. When you think about it, I don't look at him as being as intelligent as a Jason Kidd or, you know, some other point guards that's come through, but I think he'll be enough for what Phil Jackson wants him to do.
I don't think he was a bum. I think David Wingate was a bum. Like, there's different, like, you talk about bumdom. I don't consider him a bum. I mean,
Kevin Ollie was a bum.
No, some dudes are subhuman. Like Kevin Ollie, Ira Noble, Jared Jeffries, they're subhuman when it comes to basketball. So they don't even deserve the tag of bum. Like, what acknowledgement do you give that class of player? Nothing.
I mean, plus the guy is
good enough to get an acknowledgement, but let me ask you this. When's the last time you saw him make a layup, whether he was trying or not?
Here's my thing.
You know what?
When Derek,
I'll give you that, though. Every time Derek Fisher, because he doesn't drive to the hole much, but when he drives to the hole, he seems to always miss the layup. Because he's just not used to that. Like.
He's made some clutch shots and some legendary shots, and even beyond that, when he left the Lakers as their point guard, our next point guard was Smush Parker. So to me, Derek Fisher isn't a bum.
Smush Parker is another subhuman person when it comes to professional basketball.
Anyway, man, with all that being said, man, we got some calls on the line. I want to see what the homies got to talk about. Roll Tide. We got Tobias from Arizona checking in. Tobias, what's good?
Man, Roll Tide. Yeah, our softball team got swept, but that's all right. But the men's golf team won a national championship.
Okay.
What's going on?
What's going on, man? Congrats.
Man, nothing much. Yeah, I'm going to find a T-shirt on Fanatics.com, cha-ching. Yeah, you know what the problem is? It's like with Phil, everyone keeps talking like he's coaching. One, the man's 70 years old. He can't coach forever, people. You know, the man will be in the ground 30 years from now. People say, well, he'll coach his team. The man can't coach anymore. He's not healthy. But I think he should try to scrap the triangle and just find a good coach. You know,
that's true. But if they do keep Carmelo Anthony, I think that would be a great offense for him to play in. You know, triple post offense. He gets to go down and bully people in the post like he's used to. So, like, in his offense, that would be, like, it would be a better role for him. In anybody else's offense, Carmelo's basically looked at as a ball stopper because, you know, he wants to get down there and survey the post and do it. But, that's what he can get that off
in the triple post.
That's
what you're supposed to do in the triple post in the triangle.
I mean, he would have to become a better passer. But I've actually seen Carmelo when he's in the mood and he wants to pass. He can pass the ball. So I think his passing skills would even be more highlighted in the triangle.
Yeah.
So I if he stays, I agree. I mean, I think he should I think they should roll with it. But I think I agree with you. If he doesn't, if they don't have a player that can shine in that, then you might have to just, go ahead and scrap
it. You know what? And I'll make these quick. First, I know everybody loves Kevin Durant. But I still think Carmelo Anthony's a better scorer than him. You're not going to put no 6'4" guy on Carmelo Anthony. You know what's going to happen. You put a 6'4" guy on Carmelo Anthony. He's getting
punched. That's a very good point. That's a very good point. And it has to do with the perception of the two. Kevin Durant is the nice guy, and Melo is one of the guys in the group that people love to hate. When you look at them offensively, it's a lot closer than people would think, and there are things that Melo can do that Kevin Durant cannot.
Yeah, and I'll say these two things, and I'll shut up. First, I think the Spurs are going to win because the key to beat Miami is not just big men. They ain't like the Spurs aren't the overrated Indiana Pacers. They don't go around and throw the ball around, except for Manu every now and then. But they don't go around and throw the ball everywhere. They're efficient offense. They pass the ball with precision. And that's how you beat Miami. That's how Dallas got them, where you have multiple people that could break you down off the dribble. And my one thing is, like, I hear everybody talking about the Bulls, the 93 Bulls versus the Heat. Well, people forget. Everybody loves about Rodman, the last three-peat. People forget how good Horace Grant was in that first three-peat team as a defender, rebounding, all that stuff when he was young. Because that defense was unreal when they said release the Doberman. And that's all I have. Roll Tide.
Roll Tide. All right, Tobias, man. Thanks for your call. Now, no doubt, I think a lot of people do underestimate the rest of that team after they talk Michael and Scotty. I mean, that's why I picked them in seven. I don't want to disrespect the Heat as if they couldn't compete. But Horace Grant was a really good player at that time. You know, defensively, rebounding, he can hit that little baseline 10 to 12 footer, like with precision. So yeah, he definitely was a good factor on that team. And since he started all this talk, you definitely have to mention him, not just because he started it, but because he was a contributing force on that team.
Horace Grant was so good that he got in the papers one year and nutted up and said he was better than Jordan. Y'all remember that?
Yeah, I do remember that. But you're real quick, though. y'all talking about Phil needs to scrap the triangle. Yo, that will never happen. Yo, Phil not playing with the triangle is like Bill Walsh not running a West Coast offense. It's like
the draft and free agency is an every year thing, so he's eventually going to get people to fit in that.
Yo, it's like when you win the championships that he's won, the amount of with that, it's like there's no way anybody can tell you that it won't work. Like, even if it's not working for 10 years, you still believe in it.
Yeah.
know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And some of the stuff, when you think about it, you know, it's also the kind of offense, if you don't have, like, the Kobe Shaqs, the Michaels, you know, Carmelos in it, it still gets everybody touches. And, you know, it's not like a motion, almost like a motion. Yeah, so it would be effective, but I still think you need that superstar, especially that post superstar, to make it work. And people forget about how nasty Michael Jordan was in the post. So you just think of big men when you think of the post, but MJ did his thing down there as well.
No doubt. All right. Well, let's move on. Well, actually, we got another caller on the line. We got Rob calling all the way out from Cali. Rob, what's good, homie?
What's up, man? What's up? How y'all doing?
What up,
how you?
Oh, man, shoot. Every weekend recovering from the night before, man. Just chilling, man.
Partying hard.
I want to talk about the finals, but before I get to that, B. Austin talked about Derek Fisher. Now, but we all know, Derek Fisher may not be a elite point guard, but it's not the how he plays, it's how he leads.
He may not
remember
be.
That.
Remember
when Shaq and Kobe were shooting 27% in game two and the 76ers, and Derek Fisher shot them 6 threes while Iverson was playing offense. Remember, every team he was on, they went to the playoffs.
Derek Fisher doesn't get those threes, though, if he doesn't play with superstars. He don't get that off.
Yo, how about this?
Why do you think he goes to the teams he goes to? That's why he's playing in OKC. What do you say?
Derek Fisher.
I think Kobe has never won a championship without Derek Fisher as his point.
The Lakers, period. The Lakers, period. And he didn't he didn't make his list. I ain't going to go there.
What?
Y'all someone want to fight me, but...
Go ahead, say what you're about to say.
What are you
I'm about to make a Mo Cheeks comment, but I'm good.
Are you about to diss Mo Cheeks again? I mean, we already know how you feel. It's all good.
How you feel
about
Mo
truth?
Cheeks, man?
Yo, Derek Fisher is one quarter of the human being Mo Cheeks is on a basketball court.
Mo Cheeks is only relevant because Dr. J was born.
Damn, you really think that's true? You really think that?
Who was poop in San Antonio, though?
What y'all think about the finals coming up? I mean, the flop fest.
We're about to get to that.
We're about to get into that in a minute, so just stay on and listen. We're about to get into that. But thanks for your call,
man.
Rob. We appreciate it.
All right, much love. Cali love.
All right, Rob, take it easy, good brother.
My man just pooped on Mo Cheeks.
Hey,
hold on.
Mo Cheeks has an all-star game average because he played in four all-star games. Derek Fisher, the only thing he does during all-star weekend is go fishing.
I'm not comparing the two, but Mo Cheeks, like, yo, Mo Cheeks, first off, he only passed the ball to Doc. He ain't passed the ball to nobody else. second of all, when Mo Cheeks didn't play with Doc, he'll peep his numbers.
I mean, Mo Cheeks was never really a numbers. He was never a numbers guy in the first place. Like,
he never had monster numbers.
He was just a nice guy, though.
He's Doc Caddy. He's an 80s
a very good
Joe
defender.
Late 70s, early 80s defender.
And his steals are off the chart. Mo Cheeks being basically.
Nice guy. That's Joe Dumars. That's why he still keep getting jobs.
Yo, Mo Cheeks averaged 2.2 steals a game for his career. Even when he was old, he was getting 1.25. Yo, Mo Cheeks was nice, man. I smacked the ish out of everybody.
Mo Cheeks was nice. Cut it out. Now you're going too far. Mo Cheeks was a nice guy, man. Remember the girl who messed up the national anthem? You know what I mean? Captain Save-A-Ho ran out there. You know what I mean? But it is what it is, man. Anyway, man, let's move on, man.
Let's just move on, man.
What do you guys think about
Derek Fisher? Ground with y'all.
Yo, I'd take anybody over Derek Fisher with the exception of Smush Parker. Anyway,
hold up, Skyview. Wait a minute, Skyview is in the chat room saying, as far as 6 foot point guards go, Kevin Johnson, Derek Fisher. So I asked him, you're putting Derek Fisher in Kevin Johnson's class, and he says 6 foot point guard class. Yeah, Nate Archibald, honorable mention.
So you, honorable mention, you think Derek Fisher? You think Derek Fisher is better than Nate Archibald? Come on, yo.
I ain't saying that.
Nate,
all I'm saying is
Nate Archibald.
Why
you can't respect the casual fan? You can't. They're just idiots.
Yo.
Yeah, but I'm not saying that. All I'm saying is Kevin Johnson like minor yams. So he kind of drops a notch in my book.
Yo, Derek Fisher's name doesn't come up with Kevin Johnson's name. And his name damn sure doesn't come up with Nate.
Neither one of them come up with Nate Archibald.
Tiny
like,
Archibald?
Like, Scott,
that's what I'm about to say. Like, are you serious,
Scott?
Tiny averaged 34 points in 72-73. Come on, man. Derek Fisher averaged like 6 for his career. Like,
yo, he is bugging. Like Scotty, you the homie and all that.
you're bugging.
Come on, Hop. Dope a dog food, because Nate Tiny Archibald is one of the greatest players of all time. Skyview, whatever you're on, share with us, good brother, because it sounds like you on everything down there, man.
These little kids are everything, sir. Thank you, cigarette, weed, Hennessy, vodka. I'm on everything. Sir, thank you, cigarette, weed, Hennessy.
Yeah, he on everything, man.
Fisher, Kevin Johnson, Nate Archibald gets an honorable mention. I'm done. And that's and Kev, that's how you are old head. Usually come in with the old head perspective. I would think that would be totally flipped around. I think, you know, Nate Archibald would be the dude that he's talking about. Come on, man. All right, we gotta move on, because I'm gonna just say come on, man, for the rest of the show.
Oh, man. Yo, he said Nate Tiny Archibald, yo. Like, yo, you can't do that. Like, Kev, yo, I'm, yo. You know Tiny Archibald once averaged 27 points a game?
Yo, he averaged 34.
Yeah, this is
he
true.
He averaged 34 in 72.
Yeah, this is true.
And the ball, like, 5'2". Of course, I'm exaggerating, but.
Yo, he averaged 34 and 11. Yo, what did he average? 28 and 10.
34, and he was passing the ball and averaging 34. Derek Fisher's career average is closer to ours than it is to Tiny Archibald and even Kevin Johnson. It's closer to us on this show.
Yo, I'm done, man. Yo, Skyview, you a homie, man, but you on something right now, man. Let's move on, man. Let's talk about, there's nothing really to talk about. Flip Saunders returns to the bench of the Timberwolves. No one really cares.
Yo, the crazy part about it, though, Jim, is this was a move that he made because they interviewed a bunch of people and nobody wanted to take the job. They're going to flip it and say they couldn't find a good candidate. Nobody, they've offered the job to at least 3 people.
Well, the problem is, they said, from what I heard, everybody knows that the boy is leaving. Like, the boy already told them, I'm out.
Yeah, it's like, they don't, like, the Timberwolves are already hopeless. Without Kevin Love, like, what's beneath hopeless? Like, why? Why would you take that job right now?
Yo, Mike Brown turned it down, so you know nobody want that job.
Flip was in the front office, and he owns a piece of the team, so I guess he has to do the coach doesn't have to do, like, with a player, because remember when Mike came down to play with the Wizards, he had to, you know, give up his stake or let somebody hold it at least. Does a coach have to do that? Just flip still, because I haven't heard anybody say that he has
Red had a share, and Red Auerbach was coaching and doing everything else.
Red probably had most of it. He owned most of it. They gave Red whatever he wanted back then.
Yeah, man, that's crazy,
man. Not much. I just wanted to make the point that they tried to give that job away, and nobody could take it. Flip is not going to improve that team, in my opinion. Kevin Love leaves. Like, the team doesn't even have a chance of being competitive, because I can't imagine what they're going to replace him with, because no free agent of worth their salt is really thinking about Minnesota.
Minnesota, who the hell wants to play basketball in Minnesota? Like, yo, why do they have a team? Anyway, with that being said, man, Lance Stephenson acted a damn fool in the Eastern Conference Finals. So in honor of Lance Stephenson, gentlemen, I want you to give me your NBA all crazy team. And shout out to Kevin Lang, who came up with this. So, you know, much shout out to you. I don't know whether you were, you know, spoken at the time. But anyway, gentlemen,
the
y'all crazy
all crazies.
Oh, man, I had mine up. I forgot what I did with it.
And it's funny because I thought about this, and it's so many of them. Pack of the bench,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, it's a lot of crazy dudes all the time. I mean, somebody want to go first?
Yeah,
I had mine on here. I'm looking it up.
I definitely need a bench because I got a lot.
Give me some names. All right,
but you're going with your top five, so, you know, forget the bench. There's too many crazy people.
Mad,
I mean,
going mad
NBA
Max.
Was full of drugs.
I'm going Mad Max at the one. I'm going Ron Artest at the two. I know he played most of his career at the three. I'm going Rasheed Wallace, Xavier McDaniel, Bison Dele, and then I'm bringing my man, the guitar case carrier, Delonte West, off the bench. And Ricky Davis is my seventh man, and Captain Jack is my eighth. With Bynum. Bynum's on that bench, too, and Rodman. So that's my squad.
You're still making benches, even though. Both talking about benches. I know I did mine on here. I can't even find what I wrote.
See, at center, I'm trying to decide at my center whether I want to go with Bynum or JaVale McGee. I'm going to go with Bynum because he rocked the Frederick Douglass look.
JaVale McGee got a whole segment dedicated to him, though, on the best post-game show in the land.
There's so many cats. I want to put the Sean Stevenson on the team. Listen, first off, Ron Meta World Peace Artest is on everybody's team. We all know that. We don't even have to say that. So he's going to be the three. At two, I'm putting Delonte West. I put Sheet at the four, Bynum at the five. Man, and I got to go with Mad Max at the point because I saw Mad Max smoking trees during this season with a Ram Squad jacket on sitting at Broad Neary. So with that being said, he has to go on the team. And off my bench, I got J.R. Smith.
Yeah, I got that's why I hate Facebook. I know I put it on there, and I'm looking, and I don't even see my comment on here.
Damn, but what about Michael Beasley? There was too many of them, man.
I know my front court was Bison Dele, Dennis Rodman, and Xavier McDaniels. I can't remember who I put as my guards on my all-crazy team. So right off the top, I'm going to go – I don't know. Y'all come back to me. I don't want to hold the show up. We move on.
We already went, though.
I want to give a couple shout-outs to players that didn't make my squad. Shout-out to Mario Elie because he was crazy. Shout-out to Anthony Mason because he was a nut. Shout-out to JR. Shout-out to Royce White, who's never played an NBA minute, but we know he's nuts.
Yo, how about this one? I got one for you guys. How about Alvin Robertson, who had everybody shook when he was like 6'3"? And
yo, he was an enforcer at guard.
Yo, he was an enforcer at like 6'2", 6'3", and, yo, had everybody shook, including the big man, Pauls. But he got to get mentioned, man. There's a lot of crazy cats in the NBA, man. NBA might have the most characters out of every sport, yo.
We can't mistake tough for crazy because I've looked at the list in our community, and some of the guys, like, Charles Oakley wasn't crazy. He knew exactly what he was doing.
You on that list now?
I don't think Derek Holman was crazy. I think Derek was actually, he was just into collecting checks without much effort. Some of these guys weren't really crazy.
Can you see my comments on that list?
Let me look.
I can't find it. I think I might have had Captain Jack at the two.
All right. Now, without further ado, I'm going to give you Devin's top five. Devin's starting five is Dennis Rodman, Xavier McDaniel, Ron Artest, Captain Jack, and Bison Dele. That was your five, Dev.
Yo, how the hell did I forget Dennis Rodman? Also, yo, Gilbert Arenas.
I put Dennis on my bench.
Gilbert Arenas is the greatest hustler of all time, but also one of the craziest. My man pulled his strap out in the locker room.
Yo, I was honestly thinking of putting Javaris Crittenden as my one, but then I was like, I don't even want to give that jabroni any shine.
Yeah, man. Damn, it's a lot of dudes, man. Like, yo. Yo, there's just too many of them, man. Andre Blatch. I'm sitting there thinking about crazy dudes in the league, man. NBA has a lot of characters, man, but those are some of the few, man. Let's see what they got. Anybody in the chat room got any crazy players we haven't mentioned? Let us know. But let's move on nonetheless, man, because we got the finals coming up, and we definitely got to talk about the finals, man. But anyway, before we do that, the NBA Awards, the all-defensive team. Dad, you got the all-defensive team in front of you?
Yeah, I'm lunching, man.
you still looking for your crazy team, man?
No, you just read it. I just forgot that was coming up. I had my list up. Great. I know the first team consisted of Chris Paul, Andre Iguodala.
Overrated.
Who?
Underrated.
Andre Iguodala?
No, Chris Paul.
Joakim Noah. I don't know. Let me look it up, man. Y'all just keep
all right, but hold on, though. Be awesome. You saying Chris Paul is overrated as a defender or as a player?
Probably both, but more. I was speaking more to defensive prowess.
He's the best point guard in the league.
Yeah, people equate the amount of steals he gets to him playing D, and I can tell you right now that there are actual mediocre guys in the league, not bums, but mediocre guys that cook him when he's on the ball. Now he does play that. He gambles a lot, so he plays the passing lanes. And a lot of times he gambles right, but there are times when those gambles cost him, and he counts on the fact that DeAndre Jordan is back there as a shot blocker.
I got first team.
You said he's the best point guard in the league, though?
Huh? You
said he's the best point guard in the league?
The best defensive point guard in the league?
No, just in general, the best point guard.
Yeah, he's the best point guard. He's the best point guard.
And he's still overrated?
Yeah. Yeah.
Come on, man, the best and still say he overrated. He the best, but he overrated.
Well, no,
yeah,
actually, if you listen to the way people talk to him, though, they talk to him in like an all-time great type thing, so he could be overrated in that sense. But the defensive first team is Joakim Noah, Paul George, Chris Paul, Serge Ibaka, Andre Iguodala. The second team was LeBron James, Patrick Beverley, Jimmy Butler, Kawhi Leonard, and Roy Hibbert. Now, I heard a bunch of people in our community saying, you know, LeBron should be up there over Paul George or Andre Iguodala. And
why?
And I think because he's LeBron James, and he said he should be defensive player of the year. I didn't want to get into those conversations, probably because I just didn't have time at the moment, but I don't understand how people can really watch basketball and think that LeBron James is a better defender than Paul George and Andre Iguodala. Now, their main point was, well, he can guard all five positions. See, now that was all. That's another cliche that I don't like. LeBron James, because of his athleticism and his size, can be put on somebody from all five positions, but that doesn't mean he's going to be effective. He said himself when they tried to throw him on.
David West.
The dude from the Pacers, David West. Like
he's
too strong. Like so somebody good at the four and five positions is not really trying to hear that, no matter who LeBron James is and what his name is. I think LeBron has improved over the last few years as an on ball defender, and I definitely give him that. Like when it's nut cutting time and you need to lock up a little bit, you throw LeBron James on somebody, and he does a pretty good job. But I think the hype has taken his defense to a level that it's simply not at. And I'm pretty sure I'm going to get bashed for saying that. But he's not a better defender than Andre Iguodala or Paul George. And it doesn't matter who can guard 1-4, 1-5. That's not the position they play. And at the position that they play, those guys are better defenders, in my estimation, than LeBron James.
Lamar Odom could guard the 1-5. That didn't mean he wasn't getting cracked and smoking crack.
Yo, smoking it, though. So, no, seriously, like, I really, like, second team, I think they kind of loaded the second team with guards and forwards basically to give, I don't know, like, LeBron is getting, once you get on that first team, like, I never thought I'd see LeBron James
on the second team or lower again, you know, once he got on it. I just thought because he was LeBron, because, you know, he says the right things about how he feels about the defensive end of the floor, because he said the things about wanting to be the defensive player of the year, I thought he was automatically going to get that award just because he asked for it, and I thought he would be on the first team perennially for the next 10 years, you know, because the reputation is as such. So I actually commend the voters this year for not giving in to the pressure of the best player in the league.
Once you get that reputation, two things happen. Number one, you can slack off and people will still give you the benefit of the doubt, especially if you show and prove in a couple of situations and games, not night in, night out. And number two, it gives you license to hack. Once you get the defensive, once you get on the first or second team defense, the refs allow you then to hack. Like, they allow you to get away with
Ben
those
Wallace.
Two things always happen.
No, you made a great point, though, talking about situational defense, and I think that's where LeBron shines. I think he's a situational defender. Everybody wants to say he's the best defender in the league now, but if you look at their games, like, he's rarely, I don't know what the percentages are, but he's, you know, the percentages wouldn't be in his favor as far as how much he's guarding the other team's best perimeter player.
Yeah,
but situationally, you'll throw him on him, and he'll play all-out defense for a good four-minute stretch and then go back to playing a bum. You know,
but
so,
not the whole game. You know. He won't do it the whole game.
And to people's credit, a lot of people do that. Like, Kobe was a perennial member of that first team. He turned into a situational defender as well. So, you know, some of these guys, like Iguodala and Paul George, cats like that, like Iguodala, I had always thought he was slighted on these defensive teams. So, you know, he's finally getting that first-team love, and people are saying that he shouldn't be there. People saying that, I really don't think they watch Andre Iguodala play.
Yeah, they don't watch a lot of basketball.
Against the best players in the world. He's not
Andre Iguodala,
so he's
if
out
he
there
can't defend,
up.
There's no reason for him to be in the NBA. That's not a knock to his offense because he can score. He can score. I mean, he's not Tony Allen. But if he's not locking up, what is he really doing? Why is he here? So he's one of those guys that defends for a full 48 minutes or for whatever amount of time that he's on the court. Now, Jimmy, back to your question even about Chris Paul. If you watch Chris Paul play defense, don't pay attention to the offensive end, just defensively, and you watch Patrick Beverley defend, you tell me who's the better defender. The hacker in Beverley, take the hacks out of it. Take the fact that he hacks. But just watch him defensively, his defensive principles on ball. He's way better than Chris Paul. Not even close.
Yeah. And Chris Paul's not second. Yeah. Chris Paul's not second either. All right, so going to the
contract. You get that State Farm contract. You don't want to get down and dirty.
Going to the All-NBA teams, Jim. First team, we got Kevin Durant, LeBron James, Joakim Noah, James Harden, Chris Paul. Second team, you got Blake Griffin, Kevin Love, Dwight Howard, Stephen Curry, Tony Parker. Third team, you got Paul George, LaMarcus Aldridge, Al Jefferson, Goran Dragic, and Damian Lillard. Any problems there? Let's make them brief because we got to talk about
yes.
the finals.
LaMarcus should be higher. I don't know who he should replace, but he's not. He was better than 13.
I would actually put Blake Griffin on the first team over Joakim Noah. I assume they're trying to put centers on the team because I'm looking at the list. It is two forwards, a center, and two guards. So they're being inconsistent because they changed the All-Star ballot to just, you know, feature front court players.
I was thinking the same thing. Like Blake was.
Yeah.
I mean, to me was
yeah.
like third best player in the league this year. So,
right. So it's difficult to go by position and put him on the second team because you have to have a center in a league that doesn't have many centers. So no knock on Joakim because he had a great team, but first team All-NBA over Blake Griffin? I think not.
Not from us. No doubt, man.
Chris Paul and Steph are arguable, but I don't mind Chris Paul there like I do him on the defensive team. James Harden, he has to be there. His regular season is the only place he shines, so he earned that.
All right, We gotta get some final talk out, man, because, you know, we be getting into these topics so much we never, you know, get to our main discussion. But the NBA Finals starts this evening, San Antonio Spurs versus the Miami Heat in a rematch. You know what I mean? How do you guys feel, first of all, about rematches in the finals? Do you like to see two new teams, or do you like to see rematches?
I just didn't want to see the Miami Heat. Okay. I was cool with whoever out of the Eastern Conference, as long as it wasn't the Heat.
I usually like to see, you know, new blood in all sports. In this case, I don't mind because of the way the finals went down last year. And, you know, I just want to see how the Spurs are going to rebound. We've talked at nauseam about how they actually rebounded from Game 6 to even make Game 7 competitive when, you know, all the air was taken out of their balloon. But now, you know, revenge is in their eyes. So I kind of want to see how they're going to come out and, you know, go back to the series from last year and actually adjust in order to beat this team. Like, this team had, a five-point lead with 28 seconds left in Game 6. You know, a few things bounced their way. Ray Allen hits the three. That's all she wrote.
I know they feel like
an opportunity slipped from their grip last year. So I'm cool with this rematch because I want to see.
They was getting the champagne ready. The groupies was getting cleaned up. So
yeah.
Everything went downhill from that point on. But they found a way to. But first of all, they found a way to bounce back and make Game 7 competitive, and had the best record in the league this season. So shout out to them for that. Looking forward
like
to
a,
this. But
a,
let me,
a Lakers Nets rematch wouldn't have been, you know, necessary.
Back in early 2000,
that wouldn't have been necessary.
Nets
actually got back, but they played the Spurs. But like a Sixers-Lakers rematch wouldn't have been necessary
as
back
as
in the early
2000s. That was the next thing out of my mouth, a Lakers-Sixers rematch. And futile. That'd have been phenomenal.
None of that would have been necessary. Spurs.
Yeah, we talk about the Spurs. We talk about the Spurs and how they bounce back. But here's the question: what's more impressive, four straight finals appearances? Or the Heat, for the Heat rather, or two straight for the Spurs, considering how they lost, for them bouncing back. What's more impressive? Be awesome.
Two straight, considering how old they are, how old their core players are.
So, man, it's hard. It's difficult to ask B. Austin questions about the Heat because we know the kind of vitriol he has for that team. I don't know. You think that them making it back is more impressive than going to the finals four times?
I think it is as well, but it's because of the circumstances and the factors surrounding it. I mean, think about how afraid the league was when these guys super teamed up. Think about how fans were feeling. Like, when they got together, we expected them maybe not to run off as many as LeBron said in their pep rally, but this was kind of expected. And the factors that I look at the most, like B. Austin said, the age of the Spurs, the consistency of the Spurs when they're counted out, the fact that they were able to bounce back after such a devastating finals loss last season when cats like Manu looked like he was done. You know, Tim Duncan played very well, but, like, you know, how can he keep this going at this advanced NBA age? I don't know, and just all the ups and downs. Like, they went through a tough Western Conference when they were playing Tim Duncan like 29 minutes a game. They were resting starters, you know, during certain games. So they were able to go through a tough Western Conference, get the number one seed after that devastating loss. I think that's very impressive. On the Heat, on the other end, like, as long as those guys were healthy, I expected the Heat to dominate the Eastern Conference, and especially the last 2 years, the Eastern Conference has been absolute trash. So I think in any other time where the conference wasn't as bad as it was, I think you would definitely have to take your hat off to Miami. I mean, you still do. Four straight in any situation is still great and it's impressive, but I still think the Spurs feat may be a little more impressive considering their age, considering their circumstances.
I think I'm on an island by myself, and people keep telling me, what about the Buffalo Bills? I'm like, but the Bills didn't win any. To me, making four straight is more impressive because it just doesn't happen in professional sports at all.
Though, Jimmy?
Listen to what I'm saying, man. I mean, they've won championships, man. Like, so.
Well, it happened with your squad. Legacy Missouri every year in the 80s.
Yeah, but never four straight. And with that being said, I think the Celtics may have been the only team to do it. They did it a couple times. But to me, it's just rather impressive because when you win, like and that's what separates, like, you know, good from great. Like, you have good players that will win a championship, but to be able to get yourself up to play at that level, and let's also look at the Heat. They're not a deep team either. They don't go that deep. You know, they're top heavy with the players they have as their best players, but they're not a deep team.
Especially not later in the playoffs.
I'm glad you pointed that out, Jimmy, because one of the things that Pop did by resting his starters and his old guys, they've done a lot of in-game, in-season development with guys like Patty Mills and Corey Joseph and, you know, even Kawhi Leonard playing major minutes. A lot – their bench, I feel, is more developed than the Heat bench, and you can get more production out of it.
I mean, he did a massive job, which is why he won Coach of the Year. I mean, he definitely did a massive job.
At the same time, though,
those guys are ready.
As far as bench is concerned, the thing that the Heat have going for them is when they do go to the bench, they're coming off the bench with veterans. You know what I'm saying? You got Ray Allen, you got Shane Battier. You don't know what Shane is going to show up these days, but you do know he's going to give, you know, 100% on defense every minute he's out there. He can hit some open threes if he gets hot. So, you know, they're coming off with some veterans. The Spurs have younger legs coming off the bench and probably, you know, they're deeper. But, you know, I think they're both impressive feats, man. Even with the Eastern Conference being terrible, I still think it's impressive. But with the circumstances, I would have to give the nod to the Spurs with that particular point.
I understand how bad the East is, but that also, like, you have to, like, get yourself up to play against that inferior competition. It's sort of like this, right? It's the analogy I used on Court Vision, right? You meet a chick. You try and, like, you know, knock her block off. Once you do, to be able to come back and do it again at a high level, yo, you know what kind of intestinal fortitude that takes? Because after I smashed the second time,
I understand.
You're only getting 15 pumps the second time because I already conquered you.
But the only thing is, though, they have especially cats like LeBron, who's the leader of the team, so they take his, you know, they take their cues from him. Cats like LeBron have something bigger to play for than the rest of his teammates.
Yeah, but
he
that's
got
what I'm saying. That's what
lingering over his shoulder. He got the ghost of Kobe Bryant, the ghost of Michael Jordan. So for him, it's all about championships right now. Like,
his legacy,
nothing
that's
else
what
matters
saying,
to him right
so,
now.
And I
yeah.
totally understand that. That's
so
what separates
these other cats just got to follow their leader, like Eric B. and Rakim.
You got teams that'll pop in from here and there that'll, like, win a championship, but I agree completely with what you said that, you know,
that
they
legacy
have
pressure.
It's not a legacy pressure, but that's what makes it impressive, to have that pressure to be able to, like, get back up. Because, you know what I'm saying? So that, to me, making four straight, like, in any sport, to me, is, like, the ultimate. But anyway, with that being said, let's break down this year.
Yeah, he got a lot of incentive, too. Like, everybody think just because the Spurs on the revenge tip, like the Heat, you know, a lot of people said they won by luck last year, and LeBron and Wade been in the media fighting that. I don't even think they need to address that. I don't know why they're wasting their time addressing it. But you know they're sensitive.
You had to win four games. Like, you can call that a lucky shot, but you had to win four games. You know what I'm saying?
They're adjusting because you know they're kind of sensitive.
I mean,
like, I wouldn't even bother talking about that.
I would have said, tell Pop not to take Duncan out. They would have probably won, but it ain't my fault they coach messed up.
Yeah.
I'd have slammed their Pop. But
it's going to be an interesting series, though, man.
Here's the thing. Who you guys got and why? Break down the series for me real quick. Who you got and why?
Okay, well, we talked about it on Court Vision. If you guys want to check that episode out, it's on WarRoomSportsTV.com. Just look for Court Vision, and you'll see our latest episode. We talked about the X Factors being Manu Ginobili and Dwayne Wade. It's kind of like, you know, with some of the other guys, you know what you're going to get from them. And Manu was a guy that you used to say you know what you're going to get from him, but if you judge by last year's finals, you don't know what you're going to get from Manu. Dwayne Wade has been playing at a high level under the radar. The only way that's even possible is because you play with LeBron James to be under the radar, you know, as well as he's been playing. So if he keeps playing, you know, at his level and he stays healthy,
you know, he and Manu are definitely going to be those X factors. I think Kawhi Leonard has probably stepped it up a notch from last year, and I think you have to get more consistency from a guy like Boris Diaw if you're the Spurs. I'm going to go with the Heat in seven. That's difficult for me because, like we, Jimmy and I talked about, for the Heat to win in seven, that means they have to win a game seven on San Antonio's floor, which I'm not sure could be possible, but they are the two-time defending champions, so anything's possible with them. I just don't want to disrespect the Spurs and say that they lose in less than seven. So since I'm picking the Heat, I'll pick the Heat in seven.
I'll say the same thing I said on Court Vision, which is I'm taking the Heat in six. And the reason being is I can't see them winning game seven on the Spurs floor. So if it goes seven, I think it'll, in six they'll win. And shout out to Leroy. He also said something that a lot of people don't bring up, that Tony Parker hit a lucky shot in game one of that last series. But people forgot about that because of how it ended. But anyway, I'm taking the Heat in six games.
They forgot about it because the next three games after that were trash truck juice.
Yeah, pretty much the entire finals as a whole was trash until it got to the very end. But I think that here's my other logic, because I am a conspiracy theorist and I believe in most conspiracies. So, like, you know, at me and give me some more that I can believe in. I think that Samsung has the Galaxy Note 4 getting ready to launch, and their money is long. Nike's money is long. So LeBron has corporations behind him. Corporations run our world, whether you know it or not. So LeBron James will hoist the trophy and continue his reign atop the NBA, in my opinion, in six games. Brother B. Austin, what you got?
Take us out of here, B. Austin.
I have the Spurs in seven for three reasons. Number one, I don't like super teaming, so I root against everything that the Heat stand for. Number two, I think the development of their bench. I think their bench is stronger than Miami's bench. And then number three, I just think it's that time for the Spurs and for Tim Duncan to ride out of here into the sunset so that the Kobe haters can start saying that Tim Duncan is better than Kobe, so as they already are, really.
Yeah, they don't need to win again for that. They've been saying that. One, man. I just think Samsung's money right now, the money they're spending on marketing is too much. They're trying to get more people to download the LeBron app. So
Another thing that scares me about the Spurs and why I'm picking the Heat in seven, I don't know how healthy Tony Parker is right now. And
that's a good point.
If he Tony Parker is scary to me. So we'll see after game.
Yo,
one.
Rio going through it for Queen Elizabeth. Rio about to put these numbers up on him, man. Let's go, Rio.
Rio noodle.
Yo, Rio, pay your child support, beloved. Anyway,
man,
any final thoughts about these NBA finals before we get out of here, gentlemen?
No, man, I'm just ready to get it going, man. We waited all season for this. The NBA regular season is a waste of my time. The playoffs have been pretty good. You know, I'm not going to go as far
first
as a lot of other people
amazing.
Have been saying. Yeah, it kind of tailored off after that. But, you know,
blame the Pacers.
You can't tell people that. They stay hyped for the whole thing because the first round was good.
Blame Lance.
So I'm looking for a good finals, man. I just want a good, entertaining finals no matter how it ends. So shout out to those guys. Get it in.
Solid basketball. Nobody's blowing in each other's ears and none of the nonsense we had to watch last couple
smacking
weeks.
People in the face.
Even though we thought that last season, they had a good game one. The next three games are all trash blowouts.
Come on, man. We
better, six and seven.
Got our fingers crossed right now. Let's get a good NBA finals, man.
Yeah,
let's see what happens, man. Everybody out there, thanks for joining us in the War Room. Shout out to everybody in the chat room, those on Facebook and Twitter. The calls who chimed in, we appreciate it. Special thanks to Andrew Gross for his Stanley Cup Finals report. Tune in next week, same time, same place, live here on demand, WRSPN.com. That is the War Room Sports Podcast Network. For some great sports talk, we'll be discussing the progress of the NBA Finals and a whole lot more. So until then, remember, enjoy these finals, enjoy the Stanley Cup Finals, enjoy your week. We'll see you right back here next week. Remember, Facebook and Twitter, we are at War Room Sports. And for all video content, warroomsportstv.com. And don't forget, our podcast network to catch all of our shows, wrspn.com. Until next time, everybody, don't accept mediocrity. Be steadfast in the war against ignorance. We'll see you chumps on top.
different. Yo. Every Thursday, 6 to 8, they do this. Shout out to Dez, PJ, B. Austin, Doc Bay on replay. WarRoomSports.com. Get that mobile app. It's not dialed. Call it 323 smoking 0012. They be going and you sensitive, then oh well. Yeah. Go podcast, let's talk sports. Showtime like magic in a block push. Listen live, push one to join in. Rip your team or listen for your enjoyment. Hip hop dollars, pit stop and knowledge. Should be in sports credits, I ain't talking college. Five guys, no beef though. Corporate secret, but the streets know. Belafonte, I got a G flow. KC, royalty, I'm in beast mode. 2 hours, get your game up. Who's the best in sports cast? You better name us. War Room Sports.
War Room Sports, www.warroomsports.com. What? Ain't no more to it.